Welcome to That's My Personal Business, where we are pulling back the curtain on all things personal, all things business, and all things in between. Every Monday, we're hopping into your headphones to help you skip the learning curve by hearing from industry professionals, including myself. I am a destination wedding photographer turned business coach who now gets to lead hundreds of creative entrepreneurs in building lives of artistic growth, wealth, and freedom. And now it's time for you to do the same. Hello, hello, you guys, and welcome back to another episode of That's My Personal Business. How are you? We didn't have a podcast episode last week, so I'm just coming back to it. I'm like, hello, it's been a minute. I can't believe we're already moving into March. February has kicked my ass, you guys. I have had the February blues so badly. I'm like so excited for March. It's getting up to like the 50s and almost to the 60s this week in New York. Hello, global warming. And I desperately need it. It's cold in my apartment. It's cold everywhere. I need the 50s and 60s. I need them to come in with a vengeance so deep that I feel warmth down to my bones. Like, I am truly convinced that warmth is the key to my mental health getting back on track. And yeah, so that's where I'm at. I'm sick of being cold. I'm still riding my train of like wanting to move upstate every minute, hour, day, week, month. I think I might be doing it, you guys. I'm going to be honest. I think the move might be happening upstate. Also, I'm doing this intro as if everyone has ever listened to the podcast and like there's not new people here. So if you're new, hello, welcome. This is how the beginning of the podcast episodes start. They're basically us just getting coffee and chatting. And I would like to imagine you're chatting back, but for now, I'm just chatting alone in my office. Anyway, for those of you that are new, I think about moving upstate all the time. I live in Brooklyn right now, and every single day I think about moving. I just think it's time, you guys. Like, one of my coaching clients literally gave me the best advice, Lindsay Shea. Hello, Lindsay. She was like, just do it. Like, you're young and you can move back. And I was like, oh my God, you're so right. Like, yeah, it's going to cost me money to move in and out of the city, but like, I'm going to have to move either way and it's going to cost me money. Like, I might as well just try it. And so I did a tarot poll. And literally went into the tarot poll with the mindset of like, help me figure out what I want to do for like moving upstate. Like, am I supposed to move upstate? Am I not supposed to move upstate? Like, what am I supposed to do? And I got the most insane poll that literally was like, you're being kept stagnant because of where you're at right now. You're not taking risks. And like, you taking risks is what is going to like help you meet all of your goals. And I was like, oh, and one was like, cut your losses. It was like, cut your losses and do the thing. And I was like, oh, wow, because I literally have this like beef with moving out of New York because I'm like, I don't want to give up on New York. I don't want to give up on New York. I don't want to give up on New York. And so seeing the like just cut your losses thing was like, oh, yeah, I need to like stop clinging to this idea that I can't give up on New York and just like actually do what I want to do and do what I think is going to serve me. So right now, it's looking like I might do it. Like, I might try it out. I'm gonna like ask the universe for some signs and we'll see what happens. But right now, unless something huge happens to keep me in New York, it's looking like your girl might go upstate. So that's what's new in that front. In case you missed it, I also got canceled on the internet this week. I made a mistake. Let me be so clear with everyone who's a photographer, creative, whatever. Don't make Pinterest boards mood boards. Don't make mood boards out of Pinterest boards. Don't do it. I did it and I made a mistake. I didn't credit the people who were on the screenshot, and that's on me. Like, let me be so clear. If you take anything out of this episode, let it be this intro. That is that I made a mistake. I made a mistake and I didn't credit for a mood board. And that a photographer found out, they were really mad about it, and they had every right to be mad. Like, let me be so clear. They had every right to be mad. What they didn't have a right to do was get so aggressive with me. And it turned into like this big giant thing of them like calling me a child that moonlights as a professional, calling me a gaslighter, calling me a thief. I then like re-uploaded all of my own materials that I had made in AI, and they were like, no, you stole these from other photographers. And I was like, I actually didn't. These are mine. I made them in AI. And they were like, nope, you stole them. Like, you literally stole them. Like, I doubt those are yours. Like, it turned into this like big nasty thing, which if they listen to this, hi, I know you've literally threatened me multiple times saying I can't talk about this, but I'm talking about it because I think it's important to air out mistakes. And I think it's important for people to hear, like, the amount of DMs that I got, one, that were so kind. Thank you. Like, I got so many kind DMs that were like, hey, people love to, like, gather in the town square. Like, you made a mistake and you fixed it. Like, way to handle this well, which I really appreciate because it was a nightmare of a day. But, like, what is really important is, like, I got so many DMs that were like, I do this all the time. Like, I make mood boards out of Pinterest and I share them on my feed all the time. Like, I am not going to do that anymore. And so to me, it was worth sharing just to be like, okay, cool. Like, if I can keep people from making this same mistake, then worth it. Like, well worth it. So just let this be your reasoning. And also, like, on the other side, like, I have seen so many people use my images and mood boards before. And, like, had this had happened to me in my early 20s when I first got started, I used to be so hot-headed. Like, I would just serve people invoices. I was so hot-headed, and I, like, look back on that and I'm like, I really wish I hadn't been so hot-headed, and I would have just had soft conversations with people like I do now, where I'm just like, hey, that's my image, can you please credit me if you're going to use it for a mood board or for advertising or for anything like that. Like, I need you to clearly state who that image is by, because people make mistakes. Like, people make mistakes, people don't know. I also, like, the amount of newer photographers that just, like, don't know this kind of etiquette is significant. And so, like, whether you're the one making the mistake, if you're the one seeing someone make a mistake, please handle it gently. Like, there's no reason to be rude and to be condescending and to be aggressive. And two, if you're the one making the mistake, do better. And, like, this can be your learning lesson that you shouldn't be sharing things from Pinterest. And yeah, that's on that. Don't do it, because I did it and it was an absolute nightmare every day. It was, like, the weirdest start to my week ever. Anyway, what else is new? I'm going back to the gym again. I'm doing it. I have literally no desire in the entire world to be at the gym, but I'm trying really, really hard. Jamie, my sweetie baby assistant who edits these podcasts for you, shared with me an amazing podcast episode from, it's called, like, something slow your fucking mind, or, like, mind your fucking business, something like that. It's an amazing title. I'll have Jamie link it for you guys in the show notes. But it was just talking about, like, the part of our brain that, like, is signaled / used when we make hard decisions, is, like, there's literally a part of our brain that either grows like a muscle when we use it more often, making it easier to make hard decisions, or it gets smaller, right? Like, if you don't use it, you lose it. If you're not making hard decisions and you're not pushing yourself, it starts to shrink. And so it's this cyclical pattern where if we're not making hard decisions, we're not pushing ourselves often, then it gets smaller and then we want to do it even less. And I think that's where I've ended up with things like the gym or self-care, is I'm like, ugh, I don't want to do it. And so now I want to do it even less because that part of my brain is getting smaller and smaller. And basically, by practicing doing things that we don't want to do and by practicing things that are hard, we grow that part of our brain, and then it gets easier and easier with time, which was, like, crazy to learn that it's a literal physical part of our brain that's getting bigger. Like, are you kidding me? Hello. So that's what I'm working on right now, is growing that part of my brain and doing things that are hard that I don't want to do. Number one being going to the gym. But I just found a hot yoga studio around the corner from my house, and I think I'm going to try that because that used to be my favorite thing in the world. So anyway, that is all my updates for you. It is a new month. Wow, this was a long intro, you guys. I missed you. I missed chatting with you. But it's a new month, and it is March, and it is Money March. We are talking about money all month this month on the podcast, and I'm so excited because money management, wealth management, like, money mindfulness has been something that I've been really on a kick on lately, and just wanting, like, I've just been hungry to learn more. And so I'm so excited. We have the incredible Gina Knox on the podcast today, and she is so smart. I learned so much. I'm actually attending her training. It will have passed by now, but maybe she has a replay of how to earn or how to save, I think it's like 30K in 30 days or like 10K in 30 days or something like that. And I'm so excited to attend it. But, like, the things that she covers in this podcast episode, you guys, are so helpful both for mindset and for actionable steps to take around your money. And so I'm just giddy that we have her on the podcast. I'm so excited we get to kick off the month with her. We have such an amazing month lined up to talk about money, to talk about investing, to talk about wealth management. And so I'm really excited to help you guys be more mindful and aware and smart about your money. So I'm going to stop rambling now. I know you're here to listen to Gina, and let's get started. Hello, hello, you guys. Welcome back to the podcast, and welcome Gina Knox. Gina, I'm so excited to have you.
Hi, everybody. So glad to be here.
Oh my gosh. I'm I have like so many. I literally was thinking about this while walking my dog. I was like, I have so many questions for me.
You know what? Those might be the best ones.
Exactly. I'm like, those are probably like what my, like, I'm gonna ask the questions I wanna know the answers to.
Yes.
And so I'm sure my audience will benefit from them as well. But I was like, oh, I have so many personal questions.
Fun.
For those that don't know you yet, could you give us a little intro on yourself?
Yes, of course. Hi, everybody. My name is Gina Knox, aka Money's Mom. That's what all my clients call me lovingly. And I'm a financial coach for entrepreneurs with variable income.
Amazing.
It's my whole jam. I have two programs that I coach in. I have my 12-month saving program called Six Figure Saver. It's all about saving in business and business finance and cash flow and debt and all those things. And then I have my 6-month mastermind, Seven Figure Wealth, which is like, cool, now we got the foundation of savings. Now we want to leverage your business to build your own personal wealth. And it's a whole like personal finance side of things. So that's what I do.
Ooh, I talk to us a little bit about that. I would love to know, like, kind of the difference between the two because it's so
Yes.
funny. I'm like, I just got off a coaching call today where she was talking to me about, like, how much do I pay myself? Like, do I keep money in my bank account? And I was like, talking about how, I like to keep a certain amount of money in my business bank account. And anyway, I don't need to talk. Can you tell us the difference between those two things and kind of like why you're passionate about both?
Yes, absolutely. Well, I wonder if I'll start backwards. No, I'm going to start forwards. Okay. The reason why I decided to help people with 100K and why like Six Figure Saver is all around saving 100K is because in the grand scheme of wealth building, if you can't save 100K, it's wealth building is really, really hard. It's like nearly impossible. I always joke with my clients because my clients are entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs, we're like in the best way, super delusional, like around money. And I love it. I'm like that too. But I told my client the other day, I was like, you think you're going to be a millionaire, but you can't even save 10K. Like, make it make sense. So the
Love.
thing with wealth building is it really requires you to almost like imagine like a little, like a hill. And you're pushing a boulder up a hill. Saving 100K is like pushing the boulder up the hill. But then when you're at the top of the hill and then you push the boulder over, the boulder starts rolling without your effort. That is wealth building. Wealth building is when your assets, your investments are making more money than you are. But you can't do that if you can't save 100K. So I dedicated my entire foundations program to that because I find that too, entrepreneurs have a lot more unique barriers to saving 100K than just people in 9 to 5s. And it needed specific solutions to that. So that's really what we focus on in the foundations program. And then in Seven Figure Wealth, we start talking about building wealth vehicles outside of your business. Because as entrepreneurs, we have the tendency to want to reinvest everything into our businesses. And so much of that makes sense, but there is a point where we need to then, like, it needs to, we need to start reaping the benefits, right? And I think that too many entrepreneurs wait too long to reap the benefits of their business. And so that's what that's all about. It's all about building a personal wealth portfolio. It's about learning about the stock market, learning about debt from a strategic perspective, like a leveraging debt perspective. Learning about real estate and really thinking about, cool, my business is a big part of my wealth, but I need to build wealth outside of it so that I almost become work optional in my business.
Oh, I love
That's the
that.
difference. Yeah. And I always think too, like, your business is more fun when you don't need it.
Oh,
You
I
know what I
love that.
mean?
Yeah, no,
Right?
it's true
Like,
when it's not like a survival mechanism.
right. When you're like, I get to be here, but I don't have to be here.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
So, talk to me about like, because I can already hear my listeners being like 10K a month. Like, I don't even make 10K a month. Like, where one, how much is your like average client earning monthly? Like, where does when you're like trying to save 100K, how much do you need to be making? Like, what does that look like?
Okay, let's talk about this. It's an understandable question. I think it's the wrong question. Here's why. Saving is not a result of your income. Saving is a result of implementing a saving process. You do need income to do that, but I think people hyperfixate on income as the solution to your lack of savings. But if that were true, then all my seven-figure clients would have tons of money in their bank accounts. And yet, you can be a high earner and have very little in savings, because saving is the result of a saving process. So I will say, on average, I think my clients sit somewhere around 80 to 120K. That's kind of like the bulk of people. We have, it's almost like a bell curve. We have some people who are in the multiple six-figure, seven-figure level. And we have a group of people who are, I would say, anywhere from 5K a year to maybe 50K a year, who are just really starting out. So we have people across the spectrum. But the whole thing around saving 100K is you just need to start. You need to start with saving 1K. You need to start with saving with what you currently have. And you need to implement a saving process with your current income level, and then add more like fuel to the fire, then add more money in. But if you add more money in without having a savings process, it won't just turn into savings. So all this is to say, I don't think you need to be at an income level to implement a six-figure saving process. Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense. That's lower than I expected you to say. Like,
oh yeah.
In my head, I was like, do I earn enough to do that? Like, I don't know if I have that. Okay. So talk to us about like, what is a savings process? Like, because to me, I'm like, my average listener is probably earning, I'm like, again, bell curve. I'm like starting out maybe 20K, to like the highest, maybe being like around 150. What is a savings process, and how does one even get started with that?
I'd love to talk about it. I invented a cash flow management process called the cash flow waterfall. I'm obsessed with it. I'm super, super obsessed with it. And it's really specific for your business bank accounts. So first of all, if you're at the 20K level, you may not even have separate business bank accounts. If you are at the 20K level, open separate business bank accounts. Dear Lord, like separate it out. I don't care how little money you're earning, separate it out. Even just from a compliance and a tax perspective, it'll be easier for you. Then, in the cash flow waterfall, the way it works is you have three business bank accounts. You have your checking account, where all the money comes in and out of. You have your working capital, which is a fancy way of saying savings. And then you have tax savings separate. The reason those two are separate is so many business owners just have checking and savings. And then when like something happens, they freak out. And I'm like, okay, what do you have in savings? And then they go, but I can't touch that, because I can't touch my savings because it's all commingled with the tax savings. I love to have it separated out so that you instantly know my savings are always available to be used versus my tax savings is separated out. So those are the three. Then I teach a bank rules-based approach compared to a budgeting-based approach. I feel like a lot of people, when they hear money coach, they think budgeting and they think like cutting expenses. And as much as like you may want to do that, I think that it's easier to save when it's like the savings process is you proof. Like, you don't need to have your willpower all the way tied up in order to save. You don't need to cut expenses in order to save. You don't need to do a spreadsheet before. It just is easy. So here's how it goes. You pick a number, we call it your buffer number, that you're going to leave in your business checking at any given moment. I recommend starting with one month's business expenses, but round it to the nearest thousand. So if your average business expenses are $2,795, I would just round it down to 2K. Now that's your buffer. Okay. I would round it down. I like to live on the edge. I would round it down. Now your buffer's 2K. Amazing. So what do? Anytime you log into your bank account and you see that you have more than 2K, you move the extra to working capital. And you just do that like a robot. I've had people who are like, Gina, I have more than my buffer, but I know I have an expense coming out in 2 weeks, so I'm going to leave it in checking. No, move it. Just follow it religiously, because you're getting in the habit of being a person who moves money to savings. You're building a muscle of always moving money to savings. Then This is where it's super important that your tax savings are separated out. If you do need to spend some money, you can always take it from your working capital if you need to. It's there if you need to. But ideally, you have enough in your buffer already to spend, because that is 1 month's expenses. And that's it. You just follow that set of rules like a robot, and you will grow your savings. Now, there's a lot more that goes into it, but that's like the process that we teach, the core process. And what I love about that is that, like I said, you don't need to consult a spreadsheet to know your buffer number. Mm-hmm. You don't need to consult your bookkeeper to know your buffer number. You don't need to cut expenses to go over your buffer number. You just like check your bank account a couple times a week. And every time you're over, you move money. Now, if you go under your, I like to have like a safety number. Your safety number is like your highest automated expense. My highest automated expense that leaves my bank account without me touching it is $1,000. So I never want less than $1,000. And if I dip below, I'll refund my checking from my working capital if need be. But you just follow those sets of banking rules. I created this actually with, I really solidified this with one of my clients who has ADHD, and she really struggles with just like, what's it called?
Executive dysfunction.
Thank you. Executive function. I think it's executive function. Yes. She struggles with it. She also, people with ADHD have a big correlation with impulse spending. Mm-hmm. And she was just like, Gina, I'm not going to look at a spreadsheet. Like, I'm not going to do it. So I was like, okay, I got to find another way. And this is what emerged out of that. And I feel like it's why it's so easy for almost everyone to pick it up, because it's literally just follow a rule. That's it.
Mm-hmm. So what does the money do? Was the third one working capital? Am I remembering?
The second was working capital. The third is tax savings.
Okay. Working capital. What does that money do? Like, what are we doing with that money?
Anything that you need. I love calling it working capital because it's working for you. It's mm-hmm. like, this is your business's working capital. You need to make an investment, working capital. You need to buy a new computer, working capital. You have an unexpected thing that came up, working capital. It is like, it is safe to spend your savings. And that's why we don't call it savings. That's why we call it working capital. It's a little like mind trick. So many people do not put any money into savings, and they overbloat their checking accounts because they're like, well, if I put it into savings, then I can't spend it. And what if I need it? I'm like, if you need it, you'll just take it. It's your money. It's fine.
It is fine. I know it's fine. Like that. Yeah.
So many entrepreneurs are like that. You are like, it's almost like an archetype of people. It's very, very common.
Oh yeah. It's like so drilled into our brains at this point that you don't touch savings. So I love this idea of working capital. Is that what you pay yourself out of?
If I don't have enough in my buffer, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So
but ideally suggest... because, oh, go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. I was just going to say, within the like buffer amount, is that your own income? Like, do you keep your own income in there?
Yeah. Good question. So I said, right, 1 month's business expenses. Mm-hmm. Your owner's pay is a business expense. Mm. So it should be calculated into the buffer.
Ooh, okay. I love that. I'm so glad I asked that question. That's such a like
no, it's good.
Good answer. Okay. So let's follow that train, right? Now we've paid ourselves. How does one start building that like personal wealth? What does that look like? Like, let's say we've kind of knocked out the business, like waterfall flow of things. Okay. Now we're moving it over into our personal account. What does that look like? I think this is where people really go rogue, myself. I'm like, people, it's me.
People, it's me. I'm people. Yes. So, gosh, there's so many things to talk about. First, we would want to make sure that your kind of personal finances are have a strong bedrock. I recommend $10,000 saved before you start investing and building up personal investments. We want you to have some cash. We want you to be cash healthy. Then we're going to open up your first investment account. If you already have an investment account, we're going to look at that. But a lot of people don't. And I recommend starting with a taxable brokerage account if you don't have any investment accounts yet. A taxable brokerage is great because so many people have, just like we've been drilled into our minds, don't spend your savings. Mm-hmm. We've also been drilled into our minds, investments, don't touch your investments, right? Like, there's a penalty. Don't take it out. The IRS will get you. Right. And a lot of us don't even really know what that means. I remember talking to a client once and she was so afraid of touching her 401k. And she's like, but Gina, there's like a 50% penalty. And I was like, girl, the penalty is 10%. Who told you it was 50%? She was like, I don't know.
That sounds like something I would say where I'm like,
I heard it. Right.
Yeah.
I just heard it somewhere. So the cool thing about a taxable brokerage is there's no penalties. There's no like, you can take it out whenever you want to. And we'll start funding that. The first thing you want to get to is 3K invested, because many index funds and mutual funds have a 3K minimum to start. Then I recommend starting auto investments with your current owner's pay. But let's go back to savings for a moment, because in my philosophies, in my program, I teach you pay yourself the same amount of money every month, no matter what happens in sales. And that helps even out your personal finances, because you know, income is a mess in the business. We may have a big fat cash month and then like
and
barely
then
breaking even and then nothing, right? So that roller coaster, I don't want that to translate into your personal life. I want your personal life to feel like you're an employee, where you get a paycheck once a month or twice a month, the same amount every month. When you have that, then we can turn on auto investments and just have a stream of money going into your investment portfolio. And there's so much more to talk about here. There's so much around like debt. If you have personal debt, how might we pay it off versus pause paying it off in order to build your investments? There is like a cash, there's a, what's the word? Cost benefit analysis to figuring out, does it make sense to pay off the debt versus does it make sense to use that cash and build my investments? We'll do that. We'll talk about your goals. And really the big thing that shines with entrepreneurs in both saving and building wealth is we have the ability to create lump sums of cash. Like 9-to-5ers don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
We can just make money appear. Even if sometimes that's difficult and we don't know how and it's hard, we have that power that we need to just cultivate as we go along. So what that means is you can save 10K in 30 days if you wanted to. You could create a lump sum of cash and save it. It also means you can add lump sums of cash to your investment portfolio and go from 0 to 100K really, really quickly, even though like month to month, it's a little bit of a crapshoot. Does that make sense?
No, that totally makes sense. Where do you have tips for creating those lump sums?
Yes.
Can we talk about that?
Let's talk about that. Oh my God. Lump sum creation is so fun. Many years ago, I did a challenge and a live challenge in my program. I think it was called the Fully Funded Challenge. It then turned into the Save 10K in 30 Days Challenge. And in one of the videos, I created a training that I go back to all the time around this idea. And I told people, look back at your highest cash month ever in business and ask yourself, what did I do? Not in a trick way, like in a literally, like, what did I sell? Okay. For me, it was like, I had 2 painful clients and 3 new clients over here. So what did I sell? What did I actually, like, how did I create that amount of cash? And then how did I create that result? So for the painful, how did I get someone to pay in full? And I answered that question. Well, I offered a pay in full bonus and then I coached that person. It was someone who was re-signing with me at the time. I coached that person to save enough money to pay in full so she could get the bonus, right? Like I reverse engineered it. And then you're going to ask yourself, how can I do something like that again? That's a really great place to start. Like there are already clues in your business for how you've been able to create big lump sums in the past. If you haven't ever, no, I mean, even if you, I'm like thinking back to my first year in business when I had like $200 one month, $800 one month, even if they're small dollar amounts, there's going to be the highest cash month. So you can go back and find those clues. The other thing that will help you make more than last time is identifying and eliminating your money blocking thoughts. Money blocking thoughts are just beliefs that we have that stop us from doing the thing we need to do right in front of us. And sometimes they're tricky because often the thought is true. I'll give you an example. Yeah. It's...
la, 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 la. Tell me what.
Okay. I will give you an example. I had made 30K in my business in 2021 and it is June. So 30K in 6 months. And I had had a baby and my dad had died and it had been like a crappy Q1, Q2. So I had a lot of grace for myself, but I was like, okay, I want to make more money now. And I kept telling myself, I need more leads. That's true, right? Businesses need leads to make sales. So what was I doing in my business? I was creating content that would go viral. I was trying like multiple marketing platforms at once. So I was spreading myself thin and I was making more education content and I wasn't talking about my offers. And guess what happened? I got followers and not sales. So even though the thought I need leads is true and reasonable, it wasn't the right thought to focus in on. So I remember my coach pointed that out to me at the time. And she said, well, what would you do this week if you, instead of believing you need more leads, what if you believed there's three people in my audience who are ready to buy today? What would you do? I was like, okay. I would think about like what they might be struggling with. I would create content about them. And I would tell them if they're like, if I'm believing that they're ready to buy today, I would tell them how to pay me. And all of a sudden I started making sales. And it's like money blocking thoughts block money because we believe they're true. And then we follow that line of thinking. So what, if you're struggling with any money blocking thought, all you have to do is ask yourself, okay, okay, brain, okay, Gina, you do need more leads. That's true. You can placate yourself. And then you ask, but what's also true? What's also true is there might be people ready to buy today. And you can do that with any number of money blocking thoughts. Some of my favorite money blocking thoughts are, I'm really, really tired. That's a huge money blocking thought. And I say that with a caveat that there is a difference between emotional tiredness and physical tiredness. Like if you're physically tired, go sleep. But if you're emotionally tired, sleeping won't necessarily help it. That's why it can be a money blocking thought. Another one is my prices are too high. No one in my audience is ready to buy right now. I need to do something before I can sell. Like I have to finish this project and then I can sell. All of those are money blocking thoughts. And all you have to do is ask yourself, okay, okay, brain, I am tired. But what is also true? What's also true is making a sale doesn't have to take a lot of my energy. And if I believed that, what would I do? Or my prices are too high. Okay, okay, brain, that's true. But what is also true? Well, what's also true is people pay high prices for things every day. And there's actually a group of people who love paying high prices and prefer to, right? I have to do a project before I can sell. Okay, fine. Fine, you have to do that. But what's also true? Well, maybe what's also true is if I actually sat down and did that thing, it might only take me a day versus like I'm thinking it's going to take 10 weeks. I had a client who had that thought about her podcast. She's like, I have to get my podcast off the ground before I can sell. And I was like, okay, so post your first episode today. She was like, what? And I'm like, just pick up your phone and record it, give it a name, put it on the internet. That's a podcast. Like, why are you making this big thing in your mind? It's because you're focusing in on it. So it's almost like I have my Martinelli's and my water bottle. A money blocking thought is the Martinelli's and I'm staring at it. And the money making thought is over here. I'm not asking you to not believe this anymore. I'm just asking you to shift your focus. Like this can still exist, but this is also available.
Just literally look over here.
Just look somewhere else. Your brain is very powerful. Gina, stop looking for more leads. Start selling to the leads you already have. If I would have known that a year before, I would have made so much more money.
I love that. That's like one of the things that I love talking to my coaching clients about is I'm like, how often are you actually selling and like actively telling people to come to you rather than just expecting them to come to you?
My business coach back then made me do a Instagram audit, and she went over the last like 9 posts I made. And she's like, Gina, you talked about your program one time at the bottom of a caption on this one post, and you're expecting people to buy? And I'm like,
You're right.
Like, yeah, it's almost like I should talk about my offer more. And it could be that simple.
It could be that simple.
Really
oh my God. No, I love all of that. That is all like so helpful. And I think too, just like, I love what you're saying about acknowledging that it's real, because I think that's where a lot of people get hung up with like manifesting or changing their mindset, is they're like, but it's true. And it's like, correct. It is true. And other things are also true. So I love like giving people that power to acknowledge that something is actually, yes, that's correct.
It's also like fundamentally changing a core belief and stopping believing something and believing something else is possible. I have done that before, but it does take weeks or months of continual mindset work. And it's valuable mindset work. You should do that, but you don't need to do that before you make sales. You just need to, like, in the short term, shift your focus. And then in the long term, work on your limiting beliefs, but you don't have to fix yourself before you can make money.
Ooh, I love that. That's magical.
Literally.
Yeah.
I think we get, especially in the coaching industry, we get really caught up in that. And it's like, yeah, we can do both. We can do both.
Absolutely. They can live together simultaneously. Okay. I kind of want to like backtrack to investments, because I think that's, so I'm 28. I just started investing. Like, I just started working with a financial advisor. I know. Yay. But and one of the things I talked to my financial advisor about is, I was like, I have avoided this space for so long, despite the talks of like, time is money, get started as soon as you can. Like, it took me until I was 27. Because it just seemed so scary and so unknown, and also like very male dominated. Like, I was like, I'm gonna get mansplained too. Like, there's no tomorrow.
Yeah,
like, I'm not
probably.
Mentally prepared for that. I'm not emotionally ready. Can we talk about investments and like how to get started with investing your money? So let's say, I know you have some, I know that there's different paths you can take when it comes to like debt and investing, but let's say you either have found that path or you're debt free, or like you just have money that you
you're
can
ready.
Invest. Yeah, you're ready. Where do we go from there?
Yeah. Okay. First of all, I just want to say, very much like the money blocking thoughts, a lot of people have the thought, I'm behind or I started too late. And it's like, okay, fine. But like, what's also true is you have lots of time for your investments to grow, and they will grow very quickly, especially as an entrepreneur. So I just want to say that I have so many clients who like start investing in their 40s and 50s. And it's even my clients who start in their 20s, they all have the same thought of like, I'm behind and oh my God, and I know the math, but it's okay. You don't have to apologize. That's one. Number two, where should you start? My investing philosophy, especially when we're talking about investing in the stock market, is simple, boring, uncomplicated, hands-free investments. What that means is that you're not going to be picking your own stocks. No, sir. I hate picking stocks. And it's mathematically not proven to be the best strategy in the long run. You're also not going to have a financial advisor who complicates your shit. Financial advisors are great, but don't get one who's just going to complicate shit to then like justify their fee to you. It doesn't have to be complicated. You're going to pick one to three to start with, but honestly, start with one. Boring mutual funds. Mutual funds are really, really great because what they are, I like to imagine, you know, like Santa's bag of toys for the children. A mutual fund or an index fund is like that. It's a big bag, and inside the bag is hundreds, if not thousands, of companies. And instead of having to do all the research about which stock should I buy? Should I buy Apple, or should I buy Berkshire Hathaway, or should I buy Zoom, or should I buy Peloton? Instead of having to do all of that, you just buy a share in the mutual fund. And in that share, you own hundreds, if not thousands, of companies. So they do all the work for you. And the benefit is that now you're hyper diversified, meaning you have your money invested across multiple different publicly traded companies, and they're very, very low cost. They don't cost a lot of money to invest in. And in the long run, they've been proven to be the best performing. So it's like a win-win-win-win. Mm-hmm. So I definitely recommend starting there. You may also want to introduce a bond fund. So if you have a 100% stock fund, you may also want to introduce a bond fund, especially if you are older, if you're closer to retirement age, or if you're thinking like, I'm going to use this money for a down payment on a house. So I'm not going to use this for retirement money. I'm going to use this more like medium term. You might want to introduce some bonds. Bonds are like IOUs from the government, mostly from the government. It doesn't always have to be the government, where you give the government money and then they pay you back with interest. They're way more secure. They're way more like low variability. They're also not as exciting. They're just kind of boring. They just kind of sit and slowly grow, mm-hmm. but they introduce some level of like groundedness in your portfolio, whereas stocks are highly variable. Mm-hmm. Now, even for someone who's like, Gina, what is a stock? Because that's a question I get of like, what is, I remember asking my dad that question. Dad, what is the stock market? Like, what is that? I can't touch it. I can't go there. What is it? When you're buying a stock, you're literally buying a portion of a company. Very similar to like on Shark Tank, when they invest $100,000 for 20% of the company, they get a huge percentage of the company because it's a smaller company and it's a speculative investment. But you're doing the same thing. You're taking $100 and buying 0.00000001% of Apple. Mm-hmm. So when Apple does well, your stock goes up in value and you have then gotten a return on your investment. But if Apple tanks, or if Apple goes bankrupt, even worse, you lose all your money. That's why the index funds are great and the mutual funds are great, because you're diversified across hundreds of companies. So if one of them fails, you haven't lost all your money, not even close.
Okay, so where does one find those? Like, how does one find good mutual funds?
Okay, I'll just share my two favorite, and caveat, I'm not an investment advisor, and I am not your investment advisor, but these are just my two favorites.
Yes, we are not financially liable for any of you. Let me make that so abundantly clear.
There is risk associated with investing at any level, regardless. VTSAX stands for the Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund. Vanguard is a company, they're called a brokerage firm. You may have heard of them. You may have also heard of Fidelity or Charles Schwab. These are all brokerage firms where I can open an account, kind of like I can open a bank account at Chase. I love Vanguard because they're a co-op and they have the lowest fees in the industry. So that's where I have my investments. I'm not an affiliate. I wish I could be. I would make so much money, but I'm not, because they don't have an affiliate program because they're a co-op. So all this is to say, I love VTSAX, Vanguard Total Stock Market Index Fund. It has over 4,000 companies in it, and it's so boring. It's literally just every company in the United States that's publicly traded is in that fund. So you just have full exposure. Mm. The other one I really like is VFIAX. And these little ticker numbers I'm saying, that's how you search them. That's how you pull them up. VFIAX is the Vanguard S&P 500 fund. The S&P 500 is really cool. It stands for Standards and Poor's. It's an index. It's some old money shit. But really all it is the top 500 companies in the United States. And they update the list quarterly. So it's it's a big deal when someone gets into the S&P 500, and sometimes they get kicked out.
I'm like the drama.
But you know, you're taking the total stock market and you're saying, okay, but I want to concentrate my money on the top 500 best performers. Mm. Both of those funds historically have performed very well. And I mean, like, even if we just look at the S&P 500, the VFIAX, that fund on average has grown at 10.13% over the last 100 years. So 10% growth every year on average. And that includes the big downturns, the big 2008 crash. That includes the mess that was 2022. That includes all the messes. On average, it still performs at 10.13%. So those are my two favorites. I love them. And I love Vanguard over the other ones because they've really invested in their UX and their design, and it's a lot more usable now.
So is this something that you're like pulling up Google and searching? Like, or where are you? Okay, cool.
Yeah. You could also just search top index funds. It could be that simple. It could be really that simple. You don't have to complicate it. And I think a lot of people get caught up with like, okay, well, which one do I pick? That's a big barrier. And then how many do I need? And then if I go put more money in, do I put more money into the one I already bought or should I buy more? My recommendation, again, 1 to 3 funds that you just keep reinvesting into, especially if they're already diversified funds like the ones I shared. You don't need to diversify more necessarily. Mm-hmm. You're already highly diversified. And also, I don't want you to, I just prioritize simplicity. I want to log in and see like minimal things. I don't want to log in and see rows and rows and rows of different returns and charts, especially when it's not been proven to perform better necessarily.
Yeah. So do you do like personal stock trading, like Robinhood and things like that?
No. People do? Ew. Okay. Robinhood, stay away with the 10-foot pole.
Really?
Absolutely. Get off of Robinhood. If you have a Robinhood account, close it. Close it. Robinhood has they have lawsuits up the wazoo. They were shown to be interfering with the GameStop shorting a couple years ago, where they basically shut down their site and didn't let you trade. So then traders missed out on millions of dollars of gains. Horrible. Do not recommend. Also, what I don't like about Robinhood or these like Acorns or these other small apps, they incentivize picking stocks. And like, they kind of make it like a little game. But picking stocks has been shown to be one of the lowest performing ways to invest your money. But they get a commission every time you buy and sell. So of course they're going to incentivize that. They want to make the most money because they're a publicly traded company. So they need to have a profit so that their stock goes up. I don't recommend it.
Okay.
Vanguard, on the other hand, I've been saying it's a co-op. What that means is when I buy VTSAX, for example, there's a fee. I think it's an annual fee of 0.04%. And as an owner of the mutual fund, I am now a partial owner of Vanguard as a company. So it's the incentive structure is in your favor versus the incentive structure being in the favor of the brokerage company. Because it's in their favor to make the lowest possible fees to keep you. And because you're an owner of the company, like they want to flip the incentive structure. That's what I'm trying to say.
That makes sense. Can you pull money out of mutual funds? Like, okay.
Yeah. So if you're in any account, it's your money is your money. If you have to pay a fee, that's fine. You can pay a fee. My belief is like, it's your money. When you have a taxable brokerage account, there's no penalties. So I can take my money out whenever I want, and I'm not going to have a penalty. Like if I were to take money out of my 401k, there will be a 10% penalty. With investing, you do get taxed on your growth, on your gains. So if I put in $10,000 and then I sell it and take out $15,000, I'm going to be taxed on that extra $5,000 because that's income. So there is taxes involved, but there's not fees or penalties. Okay. Yeah.
That makes sense. Okay. So I'm like, I'm overwhelmed. I can only assume other people are too.
I know. It's a lot. And I get so nerdy with this shit.
I love it. I love seeing someone so passionate about their craft. Tell us where we can start to like learn, like where we can start to take baby steps. Where do we start?
Well, I'm going to plug my own podcast because I
absolutely
meant
that. Yeah, I'm like, I'm here for you.
I'm going to definitely plug my podcast. I have a podcast called Save Six Figures with Gina Knox. Oh my God, I almost forgot the name of my podcast. Save Six Figures with Gina Knox. And my philosophy with my podcast is I like share everything in the kitchen sink. I do not hold back. So you can find almost all of my strategies on my podcast. I think we're getting up to the 125 episode mark. So we're getting like, there's a lot on the podcast that you can go listen to. If you want to learn more about me, follow me on Instagram. I love to hang out there. Or you can go to my website, www.ginanox.co, not com.co. And that's like the hub and spoke. If you want to learn more about investing, I would honestly just start like looking at YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I recommend the book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich by Ramit Sethi. It's one of the only investing books I recommend. It's very, very like easy to comprehend and very much in alignment with the philosophies we talked about today. Simple, index fund, low cost, boring, simple. And yeah, I would say that's where you could get started. I mean, there's so much information, especially if you're more interested in investing. There's a lot of information and it can feel like drinking from a fire hose. I also highly recommend talking to someone who has some relation to you, because a lot of investing advice is tailored for 9-to-5ers. It's tailored for someone who has a 401k, who has, you know, a W-2, who can do payroll deductions. And as much as that will be helpful and it'll help you build your knowledge, it might just be a waste of your time to learn right now. So I definitely recommend looking for people who are other entrepreneurs if that's your primary income source. But there's a ton of information about investing online for free, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Okay. Well, now we know we can get started with you. Listen to the podcast. Do you have like an episode that you recommend people start with?
Oh, I've never been asked that question. I mean, my most listened to episode is episode number one, which is called Create Your 100K in 12 Months Plan. And that's like a literally episode one introduction to the
podcast.
Let's get right into it. But there's another one that I really, really like. Okay. Episode 15 and 16. It's actually a co-episode with my friend and coach DL Sharon. And we just shoot the shit about money for 2 hours. Amazing. And it's like a whole masterclass. I literally called it a masterclass on money and mindset with DL Sharon, part one and part two. Those two episodes will blow your mind. It's so good.
Ooh, I'm so excited.
I might start with number one and then skip to 15 and 16.
Amazing.
So good.
Oh my God. Gina, this has been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. I'm like parched. I've been chatting away.
No, I love it. It's been so amazing. So incredible to learn from you. Can you tell us where everyone can find you online? And obviously we'll link everything in the show notes, but let us know where we can find you.
Yeah. At Gina Knox on Instagram, www.ginaknox.co. That will take you to all the places. On that website, you can find the sales pages for 7-Figure Wealth and 6-Figure Saver. We open multiple times a year. If we're not open, there's going to be a waitlist up that you can join. And yeah, and just really, I hang out on Instagram a lot. So you'll see me there every day.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been incredible. I'm like, I can't wait to go listen to those podcast episodes. I'm like thrilled.
Yay.
And thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time.